Welcome back to the Behind the Play podcast. Today we are joined by the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays and of college basketball, the one and only Dan Schulman. Thanks so much for taking the time to come back on the show. We really, really appreciate it. It's been a fun summer, I think, for you, Dan. How's it been so far? Just covering the Jays and seeing them maybe sneak into a playoff spot.
Well, as we speak, they've taken the first three of this series from the Yankees. So, yeah, the last few weeks have been really fun. I mean, to be honest, my expectations, Alex, were kind of modest for this team this year. I didn't really see it, and they've just gotten so many. I know you like the team, so you've watched a lot of the games. Whether it's Eric Lauer or Braden Fisher or Miles Straw or Tyler Heineman, obviously what Addison Barger is doing. Nathan Lucas, they've just gotten so many guys. Davis Schneider hitting two home runs last night. It's like it's a different three, four, five guys every night who's helping them win games. I think they're 22-10 in their last 32 right now. And that's with playing some good teams, teams like the Phillies and the Cardinals, now the Yankees, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been really fun. I'm very happy for the fans. I think the Blue Jays have great fans. And I think it would be wonderful for them to experience a meaningful pennant race and hopefully a trip into the playoffs and hopefully a run in the playoffs. Now, there's a lot of baseball between now and then. There are still 76 games left as we speak, but it's been really fun so far.
Before we get into the Jays, I'm just curious for you. You've been in the game for so long. You've been doing this for so long. Like, what does Dan Schulman try to improve upon as a broadcaster at this stage in the game? Like, what do you try to like? How do you keep honing in on your craft and trying to get better? And what are those things?
Well, part of it is preparation behind the scenes stuff, because the game has evolved so much in terms of analytics and also just the tools of the trade. When I started, I would get to the ballpark, and at about 4:30, each team's game notes would be, would be available to me in the press box. That's still true. The game notes are still there, but that's just one of maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 resources that I had. So some of it is about how am I using my time the best? Like, what do I need to know about Chris Bassett and Clark Schmidt for tonight's game? Historical stuff. The last time the Jays did, have they swept a four-game series from the Yankees? The last time, all that kind of stuff. But then digging in a little bit deeper on meaningful numbers. Why has Clark Schmidt been so good lately, other than his last start? When did he start throwing the cutter? Is it better to righties or lefties? Have any of the Blue Jays seen him before? Like last night, I had a fun one. With knowing that Addison Barger and Davis Schneider had faced Will Warren in the minors. And they just happened to be in the same hitting group in batting practice. And I wandered over and said, "Tell me about your experiences with him." And they both did. And Schneider gave me a great scouting report. And then lo and behold, each of them homers on the first pitch that they see from Will Warren in the first inning. So part of it is behind the scenes research, that sort of stuff. On air, it's a very good question. The easiest thing to listen back to is highlights. Like, I can just go on Twitter and click on the Blue Jays feed, and they'll have four or five highlights, right? So, do I like my home run call? Did I say enough? Did I say too much? Was I a little over the top? Was I a little understated? Stuff like that. So, I watch a lot of baseball because I love it, and I'm sure any announcer would tell you. You listen to other announcers and you say, "Oh, that was pretty good. I could try that, or I could learn to do it that way, or something like that." But mostly, it's about in the moment, really trying to focus on what matters now. Don't get tied up in a story in the eighth inning with Aaron Judge at the plate, right? Like that's going to backfire on you. Ninth inning, Jeff Hoffman on the mound, like lock in. So it's really about kind of staying in the moment and always trying to think what information is important, what does the viewer want to see and hear in this moment, and hopefully I'm giving it to them.
Was there a moment in your career where you felt maybe that ease or that kind of comfort with, maybe not overdoing it or getting comfortable in the call that you felt was right for the moment? Like, was there a moment where you maybe transitioned? Was it gradual? Like, what was that like for you?
I can't remember a moment. So my first year doing the Blue Jays was 1995 with TSN, and I was young. I was 28 years old, and I had Buck with me, which was a huge, huge, huge help to me. And I remember being incredibly nervous the first few weeks. But by June or July, the crew that I was working with, and including Buck in that, obviously, just helped me feel so comfortable. I felt like, I think this is like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I think this is the job I'm supposed to have. And I wouldn't have known that a couple of months earlier because I had done so little baseball play-by-play before I got the job. And when I say so little, I mean one inning on radio of a spring training game and then an audition. So I can't pick out a moment for you, but I've always loved baseball. And I had done, going back to university and Western and that sort of thing, I had done play-by-play of other sports. I loved play-by-play. So, but when I got into baseball, I felt like, man, I think this could be it. I really like this and I feel comfortable doing this. And I tried to learn as much as I could, as fast as I could. I would talk to other broadcasters. I would talk to Buck, our producer and director would help me out back then because I was young and green and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's gone okay.
Do you and I mean it's interesting being like the voice of a team, and there is a bit of bias because you are servicing like Jays fans, you're not servicing Yankees fans, for example. When the team's good, what's it like kind of coming to the ballpark and being like, is there a little bit of more of a pep in your step, or does it feel similar for you just when there's so much energy and people are talking about the team more so in the city and everything like that?
Definitely pep in your step. I'd be lying if I said otherwise, and I think any team announcer would be lying if they said otherwise. It's more fun to cover a team that's contending than a team that's not. It's more fun to do a game with 40,000 people there than 18,000 people. It just is, right? And we try to talk a lot. And I actually had somebody hit me up on Twitter a couple of days ago and telling me to stop being so pro-Yankee. You're talking too much about this guy and too much about that guy. And then I know there are other people who say I'm a relentless homer and I never say anything bad. Like that's Twitter, right? So what are you going to do, right? Definitely there's more pep in your step. This is fun. And if it's like this in early July, I imagine what it could be like in September, like a real honest to goodness fight for a division. I've never had that with the Blue Jays. I did 7 years on TSN from 95 through 01. They never made the playoffs. They were always pretty good, 82 wins, 84 wins, that sort of thing. And then I came back in 2016, but I only did 30 games. I really didn't start doing the vast majority of the games till I think 2020. And obviously they've had good teams. 21, they were good. 22, they were good. But to be in a race for a division would be really just me to race for a playoff spot would be great. But to be a notch above that and looking like a playoff team and being in a race for division would be really fun. And then who knows what happens in October. But again, there's a long, long way to go before any of us can assume that is going to happen. But it is really fun. Like these 3 games, I've gotten more texts from people that I haven't heard from regarding the Blue Jays in a long, long time. Like, boy, this is fun. And hey, I'm watching you here. And I'm like, I didn't know you guys were watching baseball, but this Blue Jay team at times in years, the last few years, they've underachieved. This year feels like they're overachieving. And they don't have all stars all over the field. But again, we talked about some of the complimentary guys who are doing a great job. They're fun to watch. I think this is probably a very easy team to root for if you're a fan.
Yeah, I think this is the most fun team I've watched maybe since the 2015, 2016 Joey Bats, Donaldson era. I just talking about like the team overachieving, like what do you attribute that to? Like when it seems like collectively the, everyone is playing above, where they've typically played at in their careers.
So I think part of it is the roster construction is better than it has been. Like you can throw Lucas out there against a righty and Straw out there against a lefty, and you're putting them both in a situation to succeed. You can sit Barger every now and again, or Jimenez every now and again against lefties if it's a bad matchup for them. Davis Schneider's getting in there in good matchups for him. There were times where they just didn't have that flexibility. They had almost all right-handed batters. And I had a lot of good hitters, but they kept trying to balance the lineup and it didn't really work. Barger's a big piece of it. You get a left-handed batter with who can play two different positions. We haven't mentioned Ernie Clement yet. So, and I should mention Ernie Clement, who's maybe risen above that complimentary player status with the kind of year that he's had, but he's had a great year. So that because of their defensive versatility and because they've got multiple left and right-handed batters with obvious strengths and weaknesses, they can put these guys in better matchups more often than they've been able to in the past. And I think that helps. It's something the Rays, they don't do it as much anymore, but some of the really good Rays teams, If you started a righty, then they had all the left-handed bats in there, but you looked at the bench and there were four pretty good right-handed bats waiting for you to bring in your lefty reliever, or vice versa. They had all these left-handed bats sitting there, and they seem to win the matchups, and I think the Blue Jays are winning the matchups more. Another thing is George Springer's resurgence. 35-year-old players don't do this very often, and he is having a fantastic offensive year. So that's a big part of it. Bo Bichette is healthy. He missed half of the year and didn't hit much when he was in there. And Kirk's having a great year too. So, like, imagine if Vladdy was having a great year instead of a good year, what this offense would look like right now. So I think part of it is flexibility in matchups. And I think part of it, and I know some people roll their eyes at this kind of stuff, but the unity and the chemistry and it's real on this team. Why is it better? I don't know. Because if you ask why it's better, then you're kind of asking why wasn't it as good last year? And they don't like to talk about that all that much. But I think I can see from the way the players interact with the hitting coaches how much the position players love them. I think a big part of it too, and Chris Bassitt talked about this in the offseason. I think kind of the leadership group of the team met with the coaches in the front office and wanted a little bit more of a voice in how information was being passed on to them and being used, and how much freedom they would have to use the information. I think the players have more of a say this year. And I think they brought in some really good character guys. I think Andrés Giménez is a good character guy. I think Miles Straw is a great character guy. They love Miles Straw in that room. Everybody, they love Miles Straw. Jimmy Garcia coming back is another great guy on this team. I think they've got really good guys. Usually, when you cover a baseball team, there are three or four guys you don't really want to talk to because but they're good guys on this team, and I'm sure that comes across on TV when you watch them play. So, I think it's a combination of some, baseball stuff, and then some of the other intangible stuff is better too.
I'm going to put you on the spot quickly with maybe a bit of a hot topic question, but do you believe that the Jays are the best team in the AL East?
I don't know. I don't think they're. I don't know. I mean, there are three teams right there, like as we
Right
speak,
there.
three teams within a half a game, I think, something like that. But it's. I don't think I can answer that question now. I think
That's
if they
okay.
make a couple of good trades at the deadline, and Varsho comes back, and Scherzer's okay, if he continues to pitch like he did, then I think they can be. Like, they can win this division. I don't know if they're the best team now. They're really hot right now, and things cool off. Like, what if Springer cools off? What if Kirk cools off? There's all kinds of what ifs. What if Stanton gets really hot for the Yankees or something like that? So, I'm kind of more in the day-to-day mode and just enjoying this.
Well, just speaking of the trade deadline, like what targets, what types of players, and at what positions, like what do you think they need to address at the
To
trade
me, number
deadline?
one is the starting pitcher. Has to be. And I know they've got five right now with Scherzer and Lauer, but Max Scherzer has an extensive, injury history, and he's got the thumb thing that he's dealing with now. Eric Lauer has been fantastic. And they could send him out there. I don't know if his role would continue to grow. Could he become like a regular six-inning guy? Would they trust him third time through the order? Would the results be good enough there? And then you don't even want to think about if something happened to Berríos, Bassitt, or Gausman. Like, I think there are a number of reasons to go get one more starting pitcher because you never know what's going to happen. And I think it's got to be a good starting pitcher, like a guy who can win a playoff game for you. There are some good ones on expiring contracts, and you probably wouldn't have to give up. You'd have to give up a lot. Like the Astros gave up a lot to get Yusei Kikuchi last year. That's kind of a model, but when you're in this kind of a situation, you kind of got to go for it. So, to me, number one would be a starting pitcher. I think they also could use another leverage reliever. I mean, with Jimmy Garcia back now, they haven't really had Yariel Rodriguez like this, Jimmy Garcia healthy, and Jeff Hoffman all at the same time. That's pretty good. But I think they need one more reliever. It doesn't really matter to me whether he's a lefty or a righty. Like, Brendan Little has had a great year, but the last month or so has been bumpy for him. I think they need one more seventh, eighth inning, late high leverage kind of reliever. And then the last one would be, and Ross Atkins mentioned this, is a right-handed bat. And it sounds a little bit counterintuitive because Springer and Kirk and Bichette and Guerrero all hit right. But when a lefty starts for the other team, are the Blue Jays left-handed hitters everyday guys right now? Like, when Varsho's back, Barger, Jimenez, that sort of thing. I think it's good to have one more right-handed bat. Davis Schneider made a good case for himself with two home runs last night, but I think there's room for another one. Like they were starting Jonathan Clase all the time against lefties because he's a switch hitter. I don't think it has to be an everyday guy. In fact, I don't think it should be an everyday guy because they've got everyday guys when a righty is on the mound. I think it should be a right-handed hitter who can really tear it up against lefties. And because Barger and Clement and guys can play different positions, it could be a third baseman, it could be a left fielder, it could be, a bunch of different things. But I think a right-handed bat would be good.
I guess in your mind, like how aggressive should Ross Atkins be at the deadline? Like this team hasn't been in this position in a long, long time, but also, Bo Bichette might be, leaving. We'll see. It's not clear that this team is set up to maybe overachieve like this maybe next year or the years following. So how aggressive do you think he should be?
Well, let's get a little closer to the deadline first. If they go 3-12 in their next 15 games, it might be a little bit different. So the deadline is still 28 days away as we're speaking. But if they're in a similar position to where they are now, I think he should be and will be very aggressive. And I don't think he's even hiding it. He's talking about they're going to make moves. And he said a couple of days ago when he met with the media, the Blue Jays are one of 5 to 10 teams positioned to go out and make moves because they have a good team and they have the financial ability to do that. So, they did make trades in whatever 22 and 23, 21, 22, 23, I think. But not huge moves. I guess they brought in Berríos, right? I mean, they brought in Berríos. That's a big one. They brought in Jordan Hicks. One year they brought in Adam Simber and Trevor Richards when the bullpen was a mess. So, I think he will be very, very aggressive. And if you're going to go out and be very aggressive, you're going to have to give up some pretty good stuff from the farm. And people who follow prospects are probably going to go, ouch, when they hear it. But you can't have it both ways, right? So I think there will be two or three trades coming, and I think they will improve the team.
Maybe one of like the brightest success stories of the season has been just how good Alejandro Kirk has been this year. What have you seen just being around him and like he's really taken off this year? Like what's maybe different with Kirky this year compared to maybe years past, and what do you think's made him so successful this year?
I think he's really grown into the role of being a number one catcher. He's a very, from a media point of view, he's a very quiet guy, obviously, but I think he's gotten a louder voice in the clubhouse and on the field, taking charge more with the pitchers. I think the pitchers really trust him in terms of his game calling. His game has grown so much defensively, blocking pitches, stealing strikes. His arm is better. Like in every aspect of the game defensively, he's grown. And then offensively, he's back to being what he was when he won a Silver Slugger in 2022. I think he came in better condition this year. I think he lost some weight. He spent most of the winter in Florida. And it was pretty early in the season when the Blue Jays signed him to that 5-year extension. So, they believe in him. They didn't have to do that. He's not a free agent until after next year. It's funny, you go back to when they had Kirk and Jansen and Moreno. And whoever would have guessed the last man standing in Toronto would be Kirk, and that he's the best player of the three right now. So I think he's going to go to the All-Star game. He deserves to go to the All-Star game. So I think it's a combination of just learning his craft, working hard, being in the best condition that he's been in. He's got such incredible bat-to-ball skills, such an unusual level swing. He can get to so many pitches. He's got a low heart rate too. Like, have you ever seen Alejandro Kirk panic or look nervous in at any moment
No.
on the field? So he's a big part of their success too. Like we talked about the complimentary guys. But the Springer bounce back, Bichette being healthy, and Kirk having this kind of season, those are three huge factors as well.
From being around the team, did you expect the Jays to, or do you think the Jays expected this type of season from Addison Barger, just who's just come out just like swinging for the fences, it feels like, with every swing and just being so good?
Well, they saw it in the spring. He had a fantastic spring. And I think Barger and Springer, more than anybody else, have really benefited from the new hitting coaches, David Popkins and Lou Iannotti, plus Hunter Mensch is a holdover. So I think, Barger has told me and others, they've gone back to saying to him, how do you feel comfortable in the box? Let's let your natural swing, your natural athleticism come out. And I guess it wasn't that way last year. So I think he came into camp feeling better. I think he met the hit David Popkins in the winter. Popkins lives in Fort Myers, Florida, and Barger lives in Orlando, Florida. And I think they connected, whether in person or over video, and really got to know each other a little bit even before spring training began. And Barger probably should have made the team coming out of the spring. If we go back and look, he had one of the best springs of any player. He just got caught in a roster crunch, and I think it kind of came down to him or Alec Rodon. And Rodon had a fantastic spring too. So Barger starts off in the minors and actually doesn't tear it up in the minors, but he gets called up. And then he's hitting the ball hard, but he's hitting line drives at people, deep fly balls that are caught, but they stuck with him. And more importantly, he stuck with his new process, whatever that may be. I'm not expert enough to break it down. And he hasn't varied from it. And now he's got confidence because he's had all kinds of success. And that home run he hit last night against the Yankees, the walk-off one he had a couple of weeks ago against the Diamondbacks. He's incredibly important because he is the left-handed bat with thumb. And with Santander and Varsho out, they need that right now. And they're going to continue to need it. And whether he hits second or fifth or whatever he hits the rest of the way, he breaks up the righties, he gives them a different look. And he's playing a capable third base and a capable right field. So, if they want to have Jimenez at second and Clement at third, they can put Barger in right. If they want to have Springer in right because they've got a DH Vladdy because he needs a day, they can put Barger at third. Like all of this stuff helps. And it allows John Schneider to put his best nine on the field most days.
Obviously, when people look back at the season, one of the maybe pinpoints they'll think about is Vladimir Guerrero's huge extension with the Blue Jays. I'm just curious, like, not to go back too much, but what was your initial reaction to the contract extension, and what have you thought of Vladdy's season as
My initial reaction was, wow, good for Vladdy. That's a big
well?
number. I didn't think he'd get that. My headspace, and I don't know anything, my headspace was more in the 10-year 360 to 380, maybe 400 kind of range. So now he got, so 10 years 360, obviously 30, 36 a year. That's about what he got, but he got it for 14 years. So we'll see what those last 4 years look like when he's in his late 30s. But none of that matters over the next 10 years. It's just what he does in his prime years really that matter the most. And his year has been good. It hasn't been vintage Vladdy, right? And we've seen little bursts of it here or there, but he hasn't taken over a series or anything like that. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting for a decent average. You'd like to see him on pace for more than whatever it is, 21, 22 home runs, something like that. And it's in there. And I think we all feel he'll get going. I think he's had a good year defensively too. So I would say good, but not as good as he can be. And this is the thing about Vladdy. He's so good. Joe Siddall and I were talking a couple of days ago. You look back at a game, I think it was the first game of this series, and or maybe one of the games in the Boston series. And he went like 2 for 5 with a single, a double, and a couple of RBIs or whatever. And you're like, yeah, but he in that moment he didn't do this, or he could have hit the ball there. And he's so gifted that you always want more from him. And he understands that. And I think he's having a good year. And I think it'll get better in the second half.
You talked about maybe the camaraderie of this team. Like, how much do you think him, just his like joyful exuberance for life, really kind of brings the team together?
I think that's a part of it. I think there are others too. I think Gausman and Bassett are very important on the pitching side. I think when Springer's going well, and he's going well right now, he has endless positive energy, and I think that's very important. Ernie Clement's a fantastic guy. Miles Straw has come in and given them a little bit of a different personality in that room. I think the way Jose Berríos works every day rubs off on other people, and that has a big part of it. Like they've got a lot of good personalities in the room. Vladdy is certainly a part of it. There's no question. Everybody in there loves Vladdy. But I think there are a lot, and I think they're in the best kind of leadership spot that I've seen them be in the last 6, 7 years.
I want to switch to Vladdy's partner in crime, I guess, and Bo Bichette. Obviously, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, or I think maybe that's a hockey term, but he'll be a free agent at the end of the year.
That is a we actually Siddle and I were talking about that last night. That is a hockey term. In baseball, you're a free agent or you're not.
I know I've been in July 1st free agent frenzy mode, covering the Sens, but just what do you think happens there, and maybe at the same thing, like, what have you thought of his season as well?
My guess is he goes to free agency, and he could come back or he could not. I think he'll test free agency. It's getting really close now. I think he's curious about it, and that's his right. He's got every right to test free agency. So I'm guess I could be totally wrong. We could wake up tomorrow morning and there's a press conference, but that would surprise me. My guess would be that he goes to free agency, and then no idea if he comes back, because it's all about the market. What do the Blue Jays offer him versus what do other teams offer him? That sort of thing. So I think he's had a good year as well. He's done a really good job driving in runs. He's hitting like 400 with runners in
Oh,
scoring
it's crazy.
position. So when guys like Lucas and Clement and Heinemann and Straw and all those guys are getting on, Bo's driving them in, and that's important. That doesn't impact your WAR or anything like that, because WAR doesn't look at how you hit with runners in scoring position or your RBIs. But on the field, that matters. And he's a guy you don't want to pitch to with men on base. And I think his defense has been, I think it's, about as good a defensive year as he's had. And it's a good defensive year for Bo Bichette when we're just not talking about his defense very much, right? And so I think he's had a good year. Unfortunately, he's missed the first three games of this Yankee series with a knee thing. Hopefully he's in there tonight, but they did dodge a bullet and that it doesn't appear to be serious. That's good news. So, but I think he's also having a good year and is proving himself to be one of the most important players on this team.
How do you think, like, if he does depart in free agency, like, that's a pretty big hole for the future of this club. Like, how do you think the Jays will kind of try to manage that if that were to be the case?
Yeah, one possibility is Andrés Giménez moves over to short. There are a lot of people think that part of the reason they got Giménez was in case Bichette left or got traded or something like that. So maybe Giménez moves over, and then at second, Ernie can play second or third. Will Wagner can play second or third. I think he's more comfortable at second. There are other guys coming up through the system. Arjun Namala, if he's going to be a big leaguer, and we all hope he will, he's still probably at least 2, 3 years away. So, I think that's the kind of thing they worry about in November. I think they're all very focused on what's happening on the field right now and just trying to make the playoffs.
A friend of mine who's a huge Jays fan wanted me to ask you about some their first round pick last year. So I feel like I'm gonna have to with Trey Yesufage. I think that's how you say his name.
You're savage. You're
Yes,
savage.
Savage. There you go. I tried Googling it for and I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
So I know like it seems like he's kind of jumping up and he might, is there any possibility that he's part of the Jays equation this year? Like, what do you think? Like, is he close to the big leagues, or do you think he's a couple years away?
Somewhere in between. I think it's possible he comes up this year, but I don't think it's likely that he comes up this year. He's just gotten to double A. I think he's had three appearances there, if I'm not mistaken. And it was kind of decent, really good, not so good, the last one. Also, being a young guy, just a year out of college, there's kind of an innings limit on him, whatever that is. You want to monitor that. They've had a lot of arms blow out in the system the last few years. I think they're going to be careful. I don't think it's a 0% chance, but I don't think it's a 20, 30, 40. I think it's a small chance that he comes up. If he continues to have success, I could see him getting to Buffalo, maybe finishing off at Buffalo this year. And does he break camp next year? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they, monitor his innings a little bit in the minors in April, May, and then bring him up a little bit later in the season. So much of it is dictated by performance, of course, but he is definitely on a very good path. Their second round pick, Cal Steven, is doing very well. Their third round pick was a high school kid, so he's younger. Johnny King is doing extremely well. And this is what they need, because they had kind of a disastrous year in the farm system last year on the pitching side. Guys had rough years and a bunch of guys blew out their arms. And Ricky Tiedemann still hasn't come back. Hopefully later this year, Brandon Barriere is just starting. Landon Marudis is just starting. So they need a wave of pitchers, and Yesavage is at the forefront of that. My guess would be we probably see him at some point next season.
Before I'm going to ask you just a couple Canada basketball questions, but I want to ask maybe have a family update in the Shulman household. Just how cool has it been to be working with your son for another year now? I'm always driving to the college, so I always listen to your son's games. He's great. What's that been like for you, I guess, in year two?
It's fun. So we're not in the same booth, obviously. Some people, I think we like work together. And obviously we don't. I'm TV, he's radio. But it's very fun to be, to be there at the ballpark. I try to give him the space, like, what person Ben's age wants goofy old dad hanging around all the time. So But the most fun part is because we're living the same life. Like we text constantly, and I'll say, "Hey, did you see this thing on Ernie Clement that I found?" Or he'll go back with, "Yeah, but I think he did." Like we're just comparing notes all the time.
Cool.
I love listening to his highlights on the way home. If, when I'm driving home, they'll play them on the radio, or I'll find them online after. And it's super fun for me. If he's ever talking to a player, I never go over. I give him his space. I don't want to crowd him. Again, no young adult wants their parent crowding them. So, but it's fun. He's handling himself very well. I think he's doing great, and I know he's having a lot of fun.
Do you have a favorite call of his so far as a is something that
That's
springs
a
to
good
mind?
question. I know last year, I might get this wrong, but I think he was filling in for me. Like he fills in when I'm off, he goes to TV. And I think Davis Schneider walked one off in the 14th inning of a game or something like
Yeah,
that.
that
I think
sounds
Ben
right.
had the call on TV. And it was really good. So, yeah, if I had to pick, I don't remember who they were playing against, but if I had to pick one, I would pick that.
Cool. That's awesome moments for you, and it's been really cool to see him kind of flourish. And it's
Thank you.
Shulman on Shulman, so it's kind of cool. Yeah. As some of you may know, that the way Dan and I connected was through Canada Basketball, it wasn't through the Jays. And obviously, you're a huge supporter of the program, fan of the program, like I am. What was it like for you watching the NBA Finals? It felt like it was a bit of Canadians on Canadians dueling it out. Like, how cool was it to see Shai, Lu Dort, Ben Mathurin, and Andrew Nembhard just like play at the highest level and play so well in the NBA Finals?
So unfortunately, I only saw game seven because of my job. I wasn't able to see very much. So,
Wow, that's true.
but to have four Canadians in it, and not only in it, but prominently in it, right, was great. And you know me, so then I'm sitting there and thinking, okay, so you got these four, and then you got RJ, and well, you could have Shaedon Sharpe, and that, you start going through it all again, and you're always thinking about the next window and that sort of thing. But it's great. I mean, every time I think that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has reached the peak, he surpasses it. And it's incredible. Like I saw him at Kentucky the one year he was there, and he was really good. And I knew he was going to be an NBA player, but I didn't see this. And to see Lu Dort have the kind of career that he's had, I've always been a huge fan of Andrew Nembhard. I love watching him play. Mathurin, you could see when I saw him in college, just like Sharp, who didn't play, but I saw Sharp because he was kind of with Kentucky, even though he didn't get into. You can see the skills and the athleticism and the explosiveness. And you're like, wow, these guys are all Canadian. It's really cool. I wish some of them were 6'11". I wish they could have a couple of big guys, but it's really fun. And certainly on the perimeter, the program is in great shape going forward. There's no doubt about that. In fact, if everybody who we hope is interested, there might be some really tough cuts on the team, which is crazy. It's not the kind of conversation we're used to having. And I'm just talking about the perimeter again. Up front is a little bit of a different story, but it was again, watching game seven, it was really cool seeing, four Canadians all have prominent roles in an NBA finals. I don't know if we'll see that again.
I think last time we spoke, I asked you about who's the best Canadian basketball player of all time. I mean, Steve Nash was unbelievable, but what Shai's doing, like, it's just unmatched. Like winning finals MVP, winning MVP in the same season, it's just incredible to watch.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And at the end of his career, or we might say he is the best Canadian ever. I still think Nash has to be there now because of the length of his career and two MVPs and the assist numbers that he's put up, obviously. But Shai is incredible. And you can see his work ethic, his determination, his leadership abilities. Like he's the whole package. And I hope I'm right when I say this. As long as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is still interested in playing for Canada, then Team Canada is going to be in good shape because not only is he there, but I think he's got, he'll pull them all in because if Shai wants to do it, they want to do it with him.
Is it cool for you, just on a personal note, like covering college basketball, that you see these Canadians and it feels like you can see their like whole career path and arc and kind of get to know them a little bit? Obviously, you're not day to day with them or anything like that,
Right.
but is it kind of cool to have seen this like generation that took them to the Olympics that you've seen in the college ranks?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, whenever I do a college game, if there's a Canadian player there, like I go out of my way. Not that, some of them may care, some may not, some may know who I am, some may not. But I like to introduce myself, and like Jay Billis says, oh God, another Canadian, gotta go meet him and all that. But It is fun. Like RJ Barrett, I've gotten to know a little bit better because I did so many Duke games. But it was funny. We had RJ on a Blue Jay game, must have been just after the World Cup, I would say. So late in the 23 season. And he came up to the booth and he walked into the booth and he looked at me and he went, and I said, "What?" And he goes, "You're the ESPN guy." And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "I'm also the Blue Jay guy. And next year, I'm also going to be the Canada basketball guy. Like, that's all me. I'm the one doing it." And so, and he had
That's funny.
never, he's a basketball guy. He's not a baseball guy. So, and, I know Rowan had told him that's the Blue Jay guy is the guy who called. But, there, I mean, he's a big NBA star, right? And he's got a million things going on. But when I saw in Paris, we weren't around them a lot. Access is limited. But when I was at practice or in a media scrum or something like that, like RJ always gave me like a little fist pump,
Oh,
or
that's
and then
cool.
R did too, and yeah, sure, I like that. So, I'm proudly Canadian, and I'm thrilled that these guys are doing well and that they want to represent their country. And I'm sure you're the same way. Not that nothing is happening now, because the U19 is going on right now, and the America Cup is coming in August. But it does feel like a long time from one Olympics until the next World Cup. It's like 3 years between the big ones, and I'm counting down the days.
Is it would it be like the holy trifecta? I guess maybe the it wouldn't be a trifecta, but if the Jays and won the World Series the same year Canada like wins a gold medal in like 2020,
Well, that
like
would be
what would
pretty
be
good.
going through your mind?
That's setting the bar pretty high. Yeah. So, but that
We'll
would be
see.
awesome. Don't make me pick between the two, because I'm not going to do that.
I'm
But
not going to make you do
we'll
that.
see. I still wonder about what Canada's front court is going to look like. I think we all assume Zach Edey is going to be there, and that's going to help. Obviously, I think Fiondu Cabangeli is a big body, big physical guy who's going to be very, they had that kind of a body in Paris. Who knows? A big physical guy. Maybe he and Edey split time, but I wonder about the four spot. They had Dylan Brooks and RJ playing the four sometimes against France, and they're just, not that big. And so who will it be? Like, will we see a Brandon Clark? Because the front court guys are getting older, right? The perimeter guys are younger. I don't know if any of those guys will be back. Will we see a Brandon Clark or a Leonard Miller or an Omax Prosper? But they're still lacking a little bit in my mind at that power forward spot, that big physical mobile four man. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing a guy or two. I don't know who they are right now. Hopefully they can find him in the next couple of years.
We need to somehow make Canadian basketball players taller and in that like 6'9" to 6'10" range, I guess. But Dan, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I really hope it's a fun last couple months into September, and hopefully some fall baseball for you at Sportsnet. Really, really appreciate you taking the time and doing this, and thanks again.
You got it, Alex. Have a great summer.
Thank you.